Hello, everybody out there in the podcast world. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever the fuck time it is. Have a good day. You are listening to the Crashed Cast with your host, Jack Crash O'Connor. Big bang, baby, it is a crash, crash, crash. 3-inch rooster on Instagram and Twitter. All right, so what are we talking about today? I am going to talk about bad movies once again because I just love bad movies. What can I say? I'm going to talk to you about a very, very weird one. Now, this movie, I'm not even going to say it's good. So, this one is on one of those weirder sides that it's very hard to comprehend exactly what did even occur in this movie. But it is significant because it is one of the last sci-fi movies that we put into that very, very weird category. So, generally before 1977, movies that were considered sci-fi had this strange obscureness to it, and that's exactly what this movie had. So this movie is called Zardoz. Yes, you heard that right, Zardoz. Z-A-R-D-O-Z. It starred the one, the only, Sean Connery. Sean Connery was the main person in this movie. He played what is often described as a brute or an exterminator. The movie is very hard to kind of decipher exactly all of it. But we're looking at, it's something like the year, let's look it up here, 2293. So the human population is now divided into immortals, which are eternals, and the mortal brutes. So that's who Sean Connery is. He's the leader of the brutes. So they are ones who, the brutal exterminators are the ones who go around and kind of like keep the herd in place. I know, that's a hard way to describe it. It has to do with, like, the other people and stuff like that. They're kind of the enforcers. So the exterminators, they basically, they kill and rape. It's really, really bad. It's really fucked up. One of the first lines in the movie, well, of course you see this one guy talk, describing the events and whatever that they put in place, blah, blah, blah. But when you get into the actual movie, there's a flying giant head, which is the god known as Zardoz. And so we see that, and it's saying, I hope I remember this line right. So I really, really do hope I remember. It says, penis is bad, guns good. Something like that. Like, legit that. I really wish I couldn't remember, or I could remember at this moment. But let's just take a quick look to see if we can pull it up here. Alright, so we pulled it up here. Let's just give it a quick little listen. So they're screaming Zardoz. And Zardoz is slowly floating down to the crowd of the men wearing kind of what I could describe as underwear, red underwear, thigh-high boots with bandoliers, and a mask over top that looks similar to the Zardoz. Now, finally, Zardoz is coming down to the earth. It's a gigantic stone head. Like I said, they're bowing and all that stuff. Here it is.
You have been raised up from brutality to kill the brutals who multiply and are legion. To this end, Zardoz, your god, gave you.
So they're just all sitting there staring, watching.
The gun is good.
The gun!
Penis is evil. The penis shoots seeds and makes new life to poison the earth with a plague of men.
All right, so there you go. The gun is good. The penis is evil. So it's absolutely absurd. So like I said, they are wearing these red diaper looking underwear, red bandoliers, thigh high boots. They have their hair tied back almost like in a braid. And we don't, like, in that part, we don't exactly, like, see Sean Connery yet. He is hidden behind a mask and all that stuff. But ultimately what ends up happening is Sean Connery ends up hiding inside while they're bringing in food, because they make the food in exchange for guns. So they bring the food in, exchange for guns, and Sean Connery was hiding in the food. And as the head took off, out comes this other guy, can't remember whatever his name is. They all have like really weird names, basically. Something like Arthur, but I can't exactly remember. But anyways, he's hiding inside of this gigantic head, and out pops Sean Connery and kills him. He falls into the clouds and he's gone. So the head re-arrives into like this little country estate, and it turns out that's where all these immortals are, who are like living their life. You know, they're basically, think of it as like the rich elite. They're giving guns to the people in exchange for food, and so they're the upper class who gets to do nothing but science and stuff, whatever, all day. It is super fucked. Like, I cannot emphasize how crazy this entire movie is. Like I said, it has to do with immortals. People are constantly getting resurrected. There's a thing called the Tabernacle, which is an artificial intelligence. That's what's actually giving them their lifespan. And it actually like determines like all this other stuff. There's weird sex scenes. There is weird trippy scenes that go on for far too long. Ultimately, what ends up happening, once you get towards the end of the story, you realize that this was actually all set up by, well, Sean Connery, his character. He found out how to read, like he found a library, started to read, and he ultimately ended up stumbling upon a book called The Wizard of Oz. Now, if you cut out some of the letters from Wizard of Oz, you get Zardoz, right? So you remove the W-I and the of, you get Zardoz. So the same concept was happening. They were faking that they were a god to this person using big, loud, scary noises to make it seem like there was a higher power. But it was actually just them manipulating them based off of the Wizard of Oz. All this was set in place, so he ends up like completely destroying, and they kill all the people. And then he lives in a cave with his wife and then son, and it shows them progress through the years, and then they're just like, they die, and the son leaves. It's literally, that's it. This movie, oddly enough, was supposed to be The Lord of the Rings. So the person who made it, his name is John Borman. John Borman, I'm just going to reconfirm that. John Borman here, yes. So he actually was in talks to make Lord of the Rings. This was going to be his follow-up movie to Deliverance. So Deliverance was a very big movie way, way back in the 70s. Now, Deliverance starred Burt Reynolds, and Burt Reynolds was actually going to take this job as well, but was unable to do so because of illness. I believe this was actually the time where he said he had that hip thing, but many other people were speculating that it may have been something a little bit more serious. I think some were actually speculating that he did have AIDS, but I don't think that turned out to be true. Now, so Sean Connery ended up taking this because this was actually post 007 years. So the very last time that Sean Connery did a 007 movie was, I believe, Diamonds Are Forever, which is actually a whole interesting story in itself, because there's two movies made of the same story. So Sean Connery did return for that last one. Even, you know, Roger Moore was already starring as James Bond. But during this time, he didn't have nothing. Right, we generally seen Sean Connery start to like peak again, so he obviously was in the Bond movies. That was his big young era, and then once again made a resurgence throughout like the 90s. But we're kind of in like this dead zone where he wasn't really casted and stuff, so he took on the role just because he had nothing else to do, basically. So he ended up filming, and there's a few things that were kind of crazy when it came to the filming with Sean Connery. So here's the weird part. He obviously did take a pay cut because, you know, he wasn't doing anything for years, so he wasn't a household name other than James Bond at this point. But he also had some clauses in his contract which were kind of weird. So one of the contracts, or part of the contracts that people later did confirm was real, was that he was allowed to pursue longer than required love scenes with the female actors. I don't really know fully exactly what they're hinting at here, but you can kind of get the grasp that it's not a good thing that he can just continue to push the love scene on longer than when even the director yells cut. So, like I said, it's a little bit weird. Whether things did occur that way or not, who knows? I've heard, you know, rumors over the years, whether it was true or not, but yeah, so apparently he was, other than that, you know, a professional. He definitely helped out quite a bit. Now, Sean Connery was always known as more difficult to work with, but that is kind of true. He did like to work with the directors and the other actors. You didn't hear too much bad stuff about that. It's usually when it comes up to like network executives and stuff, he was very outspoken against them, so naturally they spread the word around, making it look like he's worse than he is. But I mean, it probably could have become worse off later on, especially, you know, those later days with Sean Connery where he became this iconic actor where he pretty much just did whatever the fuck he want, right? You have that whole, whose joke was that? Colin Ferguson, where he does the impression, he's like, the best part about Sean Connery is that he's just consistent in his roles, and whenever he's doing whatever, he's just like, hi, I'm Sean Connery, I'm an Irish cop now, I'm a Russian submarine pilot. And he doesn't change his accent at all, like, or in Highlander, where he's just like, I'm a Spaniard. And he's like, what do you expect? I'm Sean Connery. You're lucky I'm even in this thing. So that could have been the attitude, especially later on. But at this time, you know, he definitely did defend the directors and stuff like that. So he was excellent in this movie. You cannot complain about his acting. I mean, he does what he's supposed to do. There was other issues when it did come to the movie. Of course, they were filming in Ireland, so they did use a lot of like the Irish people around. But also during this time, it was a big time for the IRA, the Irish Republic Army. So they had trouble getting guns imported, even, you know, as props, because there was bans on guns being imported to prevent that from occurring. So there was some difficulty, especially a movie that involves guns. I mean, like, literally, guns are good, penises are evil, right? So obviously, this did not get very good reviews because it's weird. It's a mess. It's all over. Apparently, if you read the book, it does clarify quite a bit, but in movie form, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So it is kind of weird in that instance. So like I said, it's not something necessarily that I recommend people go to watch, you know, for a good story. There is an interesting story there, but the way it's depicted, I cannot do it justice just by descriptions of random, like, images and all this different vivid scenery where they're trying to do special effects but using practical stuff. Obviously, this is what people more commonly associate sci-fi as. So we get that notion that sci-fi movies are for nerds. This one was kind of that idea, right? It's something that we don't fully understand what's going on. When Star Wars came around, it was pushed into that sci-fi category because it was science fiction, but it wasn't the same thing. These are two very different things. So sci-fi was all like this, you know, Logan's Run, stuff like that, that existed back then. But if you want to see Sean Connery in small red kind of Speedo type thing, wearing bandoliers with a mustache and thigh-high boots, this is the movie for you. So definitely go out there and watch it. Another interesting movie that I just randomly thought of right now, which I would recommend watching, not many people have seen it. It is one of the biggest like mind fucks as well. It is science fiction. It is newer. It's not in this style. It's kind of long. So that's kind of the shitty part about it, is it starts off very long and you're just kind of watching this person describe their life, which doesn't sound like a lot. Like, it just, you know, a few interesting things happen to this person, but it doesn't fully like make sense until we start to get into the climax part of the film, and then everything starts to come together, and one after another you're just hitting with each one of these things that are just more mind-blowing than before. So it's called Predestination. Now, it has Ethan Hawke and Sarah Snook, who is now in Succession. If you've ever watched Succession, that's the girl, the main sister from it. Now, she's absolutely fantastic in it. The first line that she says, it's so weird because you see the moment. They're in a bar. Ethan Hawke's the bartender. And Sarah starts talking. She's like, I bet you I can give you the most interesting story. You know, I bet you a bottle of whiskey or whatever it is that I can tell you the most interesting story. And Ethan Hawke's like, all right, I'll take on that bet. And so Sarah Snook starts beginning with the line, back when I used to be a girl. And kind of throws you in a puzzle right there. And it's confusing. And yes, 100% at one point in the story that she was a girl. And it's so messed up. Like, how you get there, I kind of see how it got there. But at the same time, it's so crazy. This movie literally has like five different twists. So basically take our decent M. Night Shyamalan twists and put five of those in one movie. And every time that you think like, wow, how can this change up even more? It's not until the next twist does occur. Obviously, I probably am not selling it that great. The movie, I believe, is on Amazon Prime. So definitely get out there and watch it. Like I said, Predestination. It has to do with time travel. Although you would never suspect by like the first hour of the movie that there's anything to do with time travel. But once it gets into the time travel part, it becomes the biggest mind fuck out of there. So if you ever get a chance, you got a couple hours to kill. I don't think it's 2 hours, but you know, you got some time to kill. Definitely give it a watch. I often describe it as a movie where I don't know whether it's good or not. So I've watched it, I've went through it, and yet I watch it and I'm like, this is so just mind-blowing, I don't know my actual opinion on it. So it's one of those interesting types of things that, you know, we sometimes have certain opinions about it, but that's my opinion. It's something you just have to watch and develop your own opinion on there. So that's why I recommend to watch that one. It's not necessarily in our bad movie range like our Zardoz was. But Predestination, yeah, definitely give it a watch. Form your own opinion. It may suck because, like I said, it is long. Especially with our minds and the way that they work nowadays, right? We jump from one topic to another all over the place. I do it in every single one of these podcasts. We start off on one topic and we jump to another and we jump to another and we jump to another. And that's just how our brains work sometimes. So it's just kind of interesting and fascinating that we make those leaps. But yeah, there's been plenty of times where people ask me, like, do you have anything to recommend? And usually I go for that one. And when people watch it, they're just like, what the fuck was that? And I'm like, I don't know either. It's just something that is there. So, like I said, Amazon Prime, give it a watch. Ethan Hawke is great. Also, of course, Sarah Snook is great as well. And like I said, it sounds all weird, but once you hit that point, it definitely becomes just this interesting story, which all comes together in the end. But it is based off of a short story by Robert Heinlein. I don't know exactly how to say it. He's one of those sci-fi type authors that are out there. You know, you read it, it's very mindfuck, puts you in a question of like, what the hell did I just read? Another one who's good for that is Philip K. Dick. If you've ever read any Philip K. Dick stuff, it's definitely crazy. It's definitely interesting. To a point where, hell, most of his books have been made into movies. It's kind of insane how many Philip K. Dick movies there are out there. And not just like tiny little movies you've never heard of. They're generally big movies. So, as an example, Blade Runner is based off of the book Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? That movie was fairly not big, but it definitely got a cult following. I believe there was some issue with the original ending and stuff like that. People didn't receive it well because the real ending was a little bit more ambiguous, a little bit more depressing, and people took to it a little bit more. But yeah, Blade Runner was the first one. We also have Total Recall. It's based off this short story. We can remember it was you wholesale. We can remember it for you wholesale. That one starred Arnold Schwarzenegger, so it might not go exactly the same as the movies, but it is based off of that. Next one, we also have Screamers, which was a big kind of horror type movie. That one had Peter Weller, so the RoboCop, Buckaroo Banzai guy, but it was pretty good, but I mean, you know, it wasn't a standout one. Our next one that we did have was Imposter. That had Gary Sinise and Vincent D'Onofrio. That was also based off of some of his work. Paycheck. Now, this one I do like as well. Ben Affleck played in it. Uma Thurman as well is also in this movie. And it all has to be about these things called like reverse engineers, which is a pretty crazy story. They build these things and then they get their memories erased of what did occur. So they get paid a lump sum, but they don't know if they invented something or not. So they can't come back. So it's like a corporation preventing somebody from holding the patent or whatever. And when he gets done with his whole invention, he's actually given just some items, which instead of paying, which apparently he opted for and he's unsure why. So Scanner Darkly is another film. Paycheck is definitely something you want to check out. Scanner Darkly is very interesting. It does have to do with drugs and stuff, but we got Keanu Reeves, we got Winona Ryder, we got Robert Downey Jr. all playing these drug addicts in this movie. And it's filmed in a thing called rotoscoping. So it's like an animation technique. It looks very odd, but it is a very good movie. It's definitely something to watch. It's filmed live and then animated over top of. So they filmed the movie, but then animated over top of it. So they look like themselves, but, you know, things just are clearly animated. But yeah, it's an interesting way to do a movie. Next, starring Nicolas Cage. That's another one of his stories. The Adjustment Bureau, the one that starred Matt Damon. I like that one, even though it is kind of like this love-type story. It's very interesting that there's people out there just altering stuff and somebody's going against that type thing. Right? Somebody makes a mistake and somebody ends up meeting somebody else, which they're not supposed to, setting off a chain of events. Once again, they made a second Total Recall with Colin Farrell. And then we have another Blade Runner movie. Now, there is more than one Blade Runner book, so it's loosely adapted. Doesn't go the exact same way, but it is similar. So, obviously, there's various things that they wrote, which are amazing. Did I even mention Minority Report? Minority Report with Tom Cruise, directed by Steven Spielberg, was another one of his books, just in case I didn't mention there. I'm pretty sure I did, but sometimes, you know, I kind of skip over that stuff. But it definitely is a crazy set of work, and that's the categories that those fall into, where they're not just providing with, you know, a simple answer to something. It's always something else, right? Like the original Total Recall, we don't know whether the memories that he's experiencing were the implanted memories or if these were real memories that did exist in him. Kind of leaves you with that open question. And that's what it kind of does with all these. It kind of leaves you with this open, with this mystery that unfolds as it goes. So you get that end of the movie moment where you're just like, wow, that's pretty interesting. What did I just watch type thing? So pretty much all of them you get that whole experience with. It's been a while since I've seen A Scanner Darkly. But like I said, Keanu Reeves, Winona Ryder, Robert Downey Jr. in a unique way to film it is just interesting. I do love some of those innovation things where they film stuff in a little bit odd way and it comes out looking a certain way, but it still ends up being amazing. Another movie that I did appreciate on what they did was called Bunraku. So it starred Josh Hartnett, who I definitely do enjoy. I enjoy even the story of him, because it wasn't just as simple as he was a movie star and then he just kind of disappeared. And the disappearing thing was actually his choice, because he kind of got pushed out, like it's going to be his life is all going to be set forth about him. You know, he was pushed into the mainstream saying, you know, we're going to do this with you, we're going to do this. Here you are up next to Harrison Ford, and people are putting all this pressure on him. And all he wanted to do was just turn around and be like, no, I just want to make projects that I believe in, not being forced into stuff. So he made that switch and just kind of went into independent movies, like reads the script and then goes into it. And Bunraku is one of those movies. Now, it's not just Josh Hartnett. We also have Woody Harrelson, we have Ron Perlman, we have Demi Moore, and the movie's story is pretty interesting, like the concept. So it was in a world, you know, where there was a lot of war, so they ended up taking out guns. So there is no guns, but things still get corrupt, there's still gangs and stuff like that, so gangs either learn, you know, hand-to-hand combat or weapon combat. So people went around and learned that stuff. The head of one of the main gangs is Ron Perlman, and he uses a hatchet. Josh Hartnett is basically a kung fu fighter, and he meets up with this other guy. Now, his real name is Gackt. It's a really G-A-C-K-T. He plays a guy named Yoshi, who's a samurai in this movie. Now, the unique part about the movie is the background. So a Bunraku is like a theater, like a traditional, like Japanese, like puppetry theater type. Well, it can be with person and stuff like that. But the background has that whole like image to it. Like it's fake background, but purposely fake, but still in a beautiful artistic way. It doesn't just look, you know, cheesy fake. It looks like it's performed in kind of like a Japanese type theater. So it's an interesting way to do it, but it definitely turns out, like I said, it's definitely interesting to watch. The people out there, they're all amazing actors in this movie. The story is pretty decent. You know, it is just kind of like a revenge tale, but We also have it all being acted out by professional actors, so. And the fight sequences and all that stuff are cool as well for, you know, people who we wouldn't have expected to be, like, proficient in martial arts and stuff like that. So it's definitely something. If you enjoyed things like Sin City with that unique art style of Sin City, but it's not black and white, so it is colorful and bright, but it has that look, that comic booky type feel thing to it. So definitely get out there, give it a try. It's definitely a lot better than probably what I'm describing it as. I definitely love this movie. I own it. There's very few movies that you own nowadays, right? We usually go for the streaming services, but when it comes to like purchasing a film, I don't purchase a lot of them, but this is definitely one of them that I do own. I probably own some like other ridiculous ones as well. You know, people would look at it and be like, why do you own that? But I mean, there's always reason I do. It means something to me. It's funny to me in some way, whatever reason. But this is definitely one of the ones, one of like the 20 that I own digital copies of, because I just wanted to be able to keep it on hand to watch multiple times. So that should kind of say something. If you got a couple hours to watch it, definitely get out there, buy it on digital, rent it on digital. I don't think it's on any stream service. When I watched it originally, it was, but it no longer could I find it. That's why I ended up purchasing it. Because like I said, sometimes you just want the availability to just watch something without delays. And this was just one of those instances. But it's crazy. Sometimes you forget, like, you see these certain actors over the years and you forget just like how entertaining, you know, how much you liked those movies that they were in. And like I said, Josh Hartnett was definitely one of them. He started off with Halloween H2O. He played the main guy, Jamie Lee Curtis's son, in that one. And then was also in The Faculty. Now, if you've never seen The Faculty, it's one of those interesting films. It's basically like Invasion of the Body Snatchers if it happened in high school. So that's exactly what it is. People's bodies were getting taken over. It's directed by Robert Rodriguez. So if you know who Robert Rodriguez is, you know the type of movie this is going to be. Also in that movie was Jordana Brewster. She played Mia in Fast and the Furious series. Also one of my all-time crushes. So if you're listening, Jordana, which I know you are, definitely hit me up. Other people in that movie was also our infamous Elijah Wood. Elijah Wood was in there. John Stewart was in there. Robert Patrick, you know, he recently showed up in Peacemaker as Peacemaker's dad. I never really know exactly how to say her name. Famke Janssen. She played in the X-Men movie. She played Jean Grey in the X-Men. Also in that movie, we got Selma Hayek. We got Clea DuVall. We also have Usher making an appearance as well. It's quite the movie. Like I said, there's quite the cast there as a supporting actors to them. And it is fantastic. Obviously, the older ones are playing the teachers. And we got Elijah Wood, Josh Hartnett as the kids in the story. So that's definitely an interesting one. I've watched that one multiple times growing up. You know, Josh Hartnett's on other things as well. Black Hawk Down. I love Black Hawk Down as well. Tom Hardy is actually in that movie. And he surprised me because it's been so long. Like, there's quite a gap from when Tom Hardy went as our side character to our main person, you know, in Venom and stuff like that. But in that movie, I can definitely see as a side character, you have a lot of heavy hitters in there, especially of that era, right? You got Ewan McGregor, Eric Bana, Tom Sizemore, William Fichtner. Kim Coates is another one who's definitely underrated, if you know who that is. If you don't, look him up. You'll definitely have seen him at some point in your life. You know, it's quite the whole group of people that are in that movie. Like I said, he was one of Hollywood's heavy hitters. Like, it was starting to become that way. And that's what they were trying to push him forward as his experience, right? The next movie He had a romantic comedy, which pushed him further ahead. Then his next movie, he sidelined with Harrison Ford. And I think it was at that point where he started to kind of deviate away from it, because he didn't like where it was going. He didn't like the studios all controlling him. And that's when he started to go into more independent things. I mean, he was still in Sin City around that time. Sin City, definitely a little bit more obscure. Like, it's still a mainstream movie, but it wasn't, you know, super promoted from our television or from the producers just yet. After that, Lucky Number 11, definitely a good one. Has, you know, Lucy Liu and Bruce Willis. Morgan Freeman's in that thing, I believe, as well. Definitely another good movie. Has a nice little twist at the end that you may or may not see coming, but definitely worth watching. Oh, Ben Kingsley is in there. But that's when you kind of see him moving into those independent movies, right? From there, then we get into 30 Days a Night, vampire movie up in Alaska. You know, Bunraku's soon after that. And then, you know, starts to take fewer and fewer roles. He was in Penny Dreadful, the television series, if you watch that. It's a pretty good series. But like I said, there's different people out there, and you just go and you see them and you're like, yeah, no, I'm definitely going to enjoy whatever they are in. And that's one of them. There's also another movie I kind of skipped over, I think, Resurrecting the Champ. That was another interesting one. Definitely an underrated one if you've never heard of it. He finds a homeless man, the champ, and it turns out that he actually was a boxing legend that people thought had passed away. So he was trying to, like, bring the story forward and stuff like that. So definitely, you know, a little bit more thoughtful movies type stuff instead of just the typical Hollywood dribble that they kind of put out. That's what he was looking for, stuff that he would enjoy himself. So I kind of respect that. I mean, I respect any actor who would do that, especially given the chance that here's your option to make millions and millions of dollars, and you're just saying, no, I just kind of want to do my own thing at this point. So I respect that 100%. So I think that is it. We're going to cut it because obviously we're approaching almost 40 minutes, going a little bit longer than what we normally do. So if you have any comments for the show, hit us up, 3-inch Rooster on Twitter and Instagram. Also, 3inchrooster@gmail.com. The number 3inchrooster@gmail.com. Stay safe out there. Don't die. Love you, my dudes.